SCP-8935, Tocophobia, the Virgin Birth. Tocophobia is a significant fear of childbirth and pregnancy, and it's a trait that can affect people of all genders, not just among individuals that can give birth. Like many phobias, there is a bit of rationality to being afraid of childbirth, since as common as it is, it's still an extreme process for a human to go through. Many things can go wrong for both child and mother, and especially in decades past, complications could arise that couldn't be easily solved. Obviously, 8935 is all about anomalous pregnancies, and the childbirth here is far, far worse than any mundane pregnancy, as well as the circumstances surrounding said pregnancies. Let's take a look. SCP-8935 has an extensive set of containment procedures, which we'll get to in a moment, but let's start with the description. 8935 is the group designation for a hostile anomalous entity inhabiting the Tanny Mine near Woods Holler, West Virginia, as well as the specific personnel affected by its cycle of ritualistic activity. SCP-8935-A is an individual that is both capable of bearing children and who has not engaged in intercourse during their lifetime. This individual will experience sudden and unexpected human parthenogenesis, meaning a virgin birth, at the beginning of the ritual activity period. The individual will always be among the population of Woods Holler, and has traditionally been a childbearing person between the ages of 16 and 32, with very few examples of one being older or younger, and only if no other appropriate candidate exists. 8935-A instances become aware of their involvement in the ritual by way of an unusually severe vaginal discharge outside of their normal cycle of menstruation. The gestation that follows is typically shortened, with the longest on record lasting 23 weeks, and the shortest being 17. During this time, the individual will experience a variety of anomalous symptoms, including vivid dreams and hallucinations, excessive strain on the body outside of what is normal for human pregnancies, aversion to electric lighting, and an ever-increasing tocophobia that often compels affected persons to attempt to disembowel themselves to remove the entity growing within them. The majority of affected individuals are able to carry the entity to term and deliver it without excessive injury, though nearly all of them experience gross mental trauma from the ordeal. This trauma can be mitigated somewhat with more severe amnestics regimens, but this often results in other lasting damage, especially on individuals who become affected by 8935 more than once. Repeat instances likewise are at risk for more catastrophic physical damage to their bodies, and are usually left physically disabled. While the individuals are not immediately rendered infertile as a result of the ritual, it is Foundation policy to remove the childbearing organs of any repeat instances on their 32nd birthdays, to prevent potential 8935-B simulacra from manifesting outside of Woods Holler. 8935-B are the result of the parthenogenesis, being biologically human, containing human DNA, and being very roughly physically analogous with normal human newborns. They are typically born with a variety of severe physical abnormalities, however, many of which would otherwise be inimical to human life. These abnormalities have included excessive hair or digits upon the face, arms, legs, and interior of the throat and eyes, additional multi-jointed appendages emerging from the spine, unusually large tongues accounting for a debilitatingly large percentage of the total body weight, a lack of eyes, mouth, nose, ear, or genitals, or an excessive number of all of these, thin membranous wings emerging from the base of the neck, or a mouth that extends down the full length of the torso. These instances are not hostile and display much of the same behavior as normal human infants, in spite of their malformations. When capable of producing noise, they will cry, though this sound often particularly affects nearby human subjects, who should take all appropriate measures to avoid excess exposure to these vocalizations. The births of these instances are often traumatic to the 8935-A individuals, mostly due to their unusual physical characteristics, and it has been Foundation policy since the 1992 Brenda Cheryl Wrights event to perform these births as a cesarean section, to limit excess physical damage to both the deliverer and delivered, though this has somewhat complicated the task of requiring the deliverer to carry their newborn into the Tanny Mine after its birth. Lastly, 8935-C is a hostile humanoid entity contained within the Tanny Mine, which enters a period of activity during the sixth new moon of every third year. So long as the ritualistic pregnancy is allowed to continue unabated, it will remain in a semi-inactive state until the evening of 8935-B's birth. Knowing all that, let's go back to the containment procedures. It's currently being contained through application of a protocol, with a ritual liaison on site at all times to ensure proper administration of the protocol. Under no circumstances is anyone to enter the Tanny Mine, as crossing the threshold of the mine without an affected individual will result in significant geological upsets, which could threaten the entry point of the mine. In order to maintain a stock of potential candidates within Woods Holler, Foundation assets embedded within the local clergy and town administration must maintain a strict cultural taboo regarding intercourse, especially in all persons capable of bearing offspring, and no one capable of bearing children beneath the age of 32 are to be permitted to engage in intercourse of any kind. Persons found to have broken this taboo are to be removed from Woods Holler and remanded to Site 46 for evaluation prior to application of amnestics and reintegration. In order to strengthen the taboo, persons who break it and are removed from Woods Holler are to be given a cover story indicating that they have been moved to a local parish to redeem themselves through severe physical and psychological punishment. Since no one who has been removed is permitted to return, this has so far been a sufficient deterrent to the behaviors. On the night of the birth of one of the instances, the individual that gave birth is to carry it to the entrance of the mine. Foundation assets can help them get to the entrance, but only the individual is to cross over the threshold. Once inside, they are to unlock the door on the far side of the threshold chamber and leave it ajar, before leaving the newborn on the floor in front of the door. They must then immediately vacate the chamber and return to the entrance, until the newborn has been claimed, at which point they must relock the door and are then free to return to Woods Holler. In the event that this protocol is disrupted in some way, a substitute instance of 8935-B can be produced in order to prevent a full-scale breach of containment. This involves acquiring a non-anomalous newborn human and making alterations to it in order to mimic the shape, texture, smell, and sounds of 8935-B instances. This process may only be carried out by trained Foundation agents familiar with the specific requirements of the protocol and who have undergone extensive analysis to ensure mental and emotional stability throughout, with amnestics available afterwards. In the event that neither the protocol nor the fallback are acceptably carried out within the allotted time frame, 8935-C will breach containment. There is currently no known method by which to recontain it. It cannot be physically harmed in any way, is incapable of being restrained, and is inimical to human life on site. Breaches of containment will last 144 hours, during which the sun will not rise in the region, after which the entity will return to the mine. Breaches of containment endanger all human life within a roughly 100 kilometer radius of the mine, with the exception of Woods Holler itself. The Foundation has worked to limit human development within this radius, but larger population centers near Morgantown, West Virginia, remain at risk. The Foundation discovered 8935 after a series of violent deaths made headlines in local news media in the early 1930s. 54-year-old John Miller and his two sons were found eviscerated in their home, which sat roughly equidistant between Woods Holler and Morgantown. The men were discovered around 4 days after the killings were believed to have taken place, and were provided a newspaper excerpt about their deaths. The local sheriff calls it the most savage crime this country has ever seen, and investigators have described the men's wounds as unexplainable. Blood stained nearly every surface of the one-room home, with deep lacerations on the bodies that the coroner stated were unlike any he had ever seen before. The sheriff remarked that he's seen animals torn up by wolves with less brutality, and it's like something went at them with claws instead of knives. Neighbors reported hearing strange noises late into the night, described variously as howling, scraping, and an awful thudding sound, but assumed it was just the Millers dealing with a wild animal. No one thought to investigate the home until after the three didn't attend services the following Sunday, and the local preacher stopped by to check on them. The Reverend recounts that the door was busted clean off the hinges, and the windows shattered from the inside, like someone, or something, got in there and tore through those poor boys like a cyclone. Adding to the mystery, there are no signs of forced entry beyond the ruined door, nor any tracks leading away from the house, despite recent rains that left the dirt road soft with mud. A search of the surrounding woods hasn't turned up any clues, and dogs brought in to help track the killer refused to enter the property. Foundation assets embedded in local police were notified of the mysterious killings and became involved in the investigation, during which an agent, Elliot Christensen, was approached by an individual who claimed to know about the cause of the killings and wanted help preventing them in the future. The individual was a member of the Baptist Church in Woods Holler, and led Christensen and three other agents to the secluded community, where they met with Reverend Malachiah Waters, who claimed to have devised much of what is now the understood containment procedures for 8935. Reverend Waters says that it's not an animal at all, and it's far more foul than any beast that walks this earth. It's an evil thing that did this, a witch in the mountain, whose arms and legs are too long and stronger than any man's. Her hair is unwashed and stinking. Her eyes are sinkholes, and her mouth is a yawning cave. She moves in queer silence and with terrifying speed. Christensen replies that no woman could have done this, or no man either. Waters says that the thing that tore up those men is not like us, as there are powers in these mountains that have been asleep for a long time. The devil stretches out his hands over the world of man, but down under the mountain is an evil that surpasses even Satan himself. Christensen remarks that that sounds blasphemous, but Waters tells him that if he's seen the things that he has seen, he'd not even think to invoke such trifling matters as blasphemy. God is great and mighty and protects, but either God can't see down into the roots of these mountains, or maybe he doesn't want to. There exists down there stuff that's not like us, not made of the same stuff as us, or anything that walks upon the surface. It's a thing that the mind can barely comprehend, and seeing it is enough to drive a man to madness. The Lord God and the devil fight over the hearts of men, but down there, it's different. He reckons that neither of them want anything to do with that. Christensen asks what that all has to do with the witch he mentioned, to which Waters says that they say she was like us once. No one who lives now knows where she came from, or how she ended up like she is. Up here in the holler, they've been hearing stories about her since they were just babes, and his Nana used to tell him that she was a girl who had been done wrong, soiled by someone who was supposed to take care for her, a brother or a father, and when her baby was born, it came out wrong. Whoever it was that did that unkindness to her didn't want people finding out, so they stole the babe and threw it down into the mine, then beat her and left her to die. She went into the mine after it, slipped between the rocks, and fell down, down and down into the miasma at the bottom of the world. Instead of her babe, she found the thing that's down there. He can't say what the terms of their arrangement was, or if there was even an arrangement at all, but she came back out. They just call her the woman now, for at least 4 generations, but before that, he can't say. Christensen asks if he knows where the creature is now, but Waters doesn't know. He says that she's out there, somewhere, looking for her babe, and no force in heaven above or hell below will compel her back until she's done enacting a cruel revenge against them all for whatever happened to her. Eventually, she'll be done, and she'll come back here to Woods Holler, past the old church building, and up the dusty road to Tanny Mine. That's where she stays, until the next time she needs to find her babe again, as that's where she fell in the stories. Down in the lowest point of her despair, she found a door at the bottom of the mine, and found out truly how deep those veins run. As for the babe, that's why they came out to find Christensen and the others, as they need to provide it. They've had some trouble, with girls trying to run off, afraid of the thing growing inside them. They've tried hard to make them understand that it's not their fault, but it hasn't been working out. The time before last, they felt that the girl chosen was too young, but she was chosen by the woman anyways. She was scared, and they did everything they could to make it easier for her, but she was too small, and the baby wouldn't come. When the woman came out of the mountain, she found the poor girl, and pulled her open like she was digging in the dirt. This time it was a girl of birthing age, and they were relieved. It's never easy on any of them, but they thought this one might be easy. She got spooked though, finding out what happened to the last girl, and she ran. He thinks that she may have had help from someone outside, but it doesn't matter. They looked high and low for her, but couldn't find her, and then 4 nights back the woman came out of the mountain and her baby wasn't there. They tried to subdue her, but it can't be done. She doesn't suffer metal or fire, they just pass through her like she's not even there. He's seen men age 30 years just from her stare, and the sounds that come out from her throat are not from God's creation. Christensen asks what he needs from them, and he says that he's gotten old, with the townsfolk thinking that he's gotten soft. He doesn't know if he has it in him anymore, and every time the woman can't find her babe, more people die. He was in the room when the woman came for the last girl, and he hopes that it's dark when we die. He hopes that there's nothing that comes after, as he can't stand to think about living that moment any longer than he needs to. He needs someone to take his place, to have a firmer grip over Woods Holler. Someone who doesn't care as much about these girls. Well, I think he went to the right place then. We're next provided an internal autopsy conducted by Foundation medical staff in 1937 on an 8935-A instance who perished during childbirth. The report notes that the female appears well-nourished, with no signs of neglect or malnutrition, and her abdomen is highly distended, consistent with pregnancy at full term. There's extensive tearing, lacerations, and deep bruising, suggesting significant trauma during labor, possibly related to the size or positioning of the infant. The fingers show broken nails with tissue fragments beneath, suggesting efforts to assist herself during the delivery. Additional bruising is noted on both wrists and forearms, with no evidence of external violence or foul play, so the injuries appear directly related to the delivery process. Her uterus is found to be ruptured along the lower segment, with an irregular tear extending approximately 7 inches. Significant intra-abdominal hemorrhaging is also noted, and the placenta, still partially attached, is misshapen and displays an unusual multi-lobed structure. Fractures are evident along the pelvic cavity, likely sustained during the final stages of delivery, and severe trauma to the vaginal canal includes complete tissue avulsion in several areas. The nature of these injuries suggests that the fetus was abnormally large or improperly positioned, causing extreme mechanical stress during birth. The infant is notable for severe congenital abnormalities, with the length of its body being 25 inches and weighing 19 pounds, with disproportionate growth in the cranial region. The skull exhibits 2 bony protrusions along the temples, resembling rudimentary horns, and its skin is thick and leathery to the touch, with patches of rough scales along the arms, legs, and back. Its fingers and toes are unusually elongated, terminating in sharp, claw-like nails, and its jaw contains a full set of fully developed incisors and canines. The umbilical cord appears to have been severed internally, showing evidence of having been bitten through, and attached to its thorax is a small, membranous sac containing unidentifiable tissue, which are possibly remnants of a failed twin. The primary cause of the girl's death is massive hemorrhage due to uterine rupture, with contributory factors including severe mechanical trauma during childbirth, resulting from the abnormal size and presentation of the fetus. Fractures to the pelvis, alongside complete perineal tearing, indicate that the labor was obstructed and extremely traumatic, and exhaustion from prolonged labor may have also played a role in her demise. In an ethics committee memorandum from shortly after, they declare that after extensive review, they are authorizing the implementation of the protocol concerning the population of young women in Woods Holler. While they acknowledge the regrettable nature of the planned interventions and the harm that may ensue, they have determined that the actions are justified within the parameters outlined in the proposal. While individual subjects will experience adverse outcomes, they're persuaded that the long-term benefits for the broader population outweigh the localized impact. The objectives of the project align with their mandate to prioritize collective well-being over isolated ethical concerns. All operations are to proceed as discreetly as possible to minimize awareness among the affected population, and as stipulated, the women targeted for intervention should be treated with minimal force required to ensure compliance, though the committee recognizes that certain outcomes, including physical or psychological distress, may be unavoidable. They trust that the team assigned to 8935 will carry out these actions with the appropriate level of professionalism and care under the circumstances, and full documentation must be provided for every phase of the project. The committee takes no pleasure in issuing this approval, but affirms the necessity of the measures outlined, and the unfortunate consequences of these operations will be a difficult but essential step in fulfilling the project's greater purpose. Lastly, they have allocated an additional shipment of amnestics to be distributed among the members of the team as needed. The last thing we're provided is an interview with Hattie Walters, a 19-year-old resident of Woods Holler who had just completed a cycle as an 8935-A instance, during which time she expressed significant distress, agitation, and suicidal ideation. Prior to the end of the cycle, she had thrice attempted to flee Woods Holler in defiance of the protocol and local taboo, with this defiance being noted as unusual among the local population. Upon the conclusion of the cycle, during which she was forcefully moved into the mine with the newborn strapped to her chest, Walters was remanded to the local parish and interviewed by a Foundation doctor, posing as a member of local clergy. The doctor states that he's disappointed to see her there, as her last stunt was truly intolerable. The Lord detests those who stray from his will, and his will is known well in the holler. She doesn't respond, and he asks if she has anything to say for herself, as this is a grave thing she's done. She then begs him to stop and to let her go, as she can't keep doing this. She can't have another one of those things inside of her. The doctor tries to tell her that the Lord demands that they do their service in defense against evil, but she interrupts him and says she can't, as she's got nothing left. Nobody else has had to do as much as her, as this is her third time, and the first time she wasn't even 13 yet. She yells that none of this is good or right in the eyes of the Lord, and he doesn't know a thing about what it's like. He's never had one of those things growing inside of him. She says that she can hear it talking to her, but not like normal people, just chattering and chirping. It hurts, and you wake up in the night to see blood on the bedsheets, praying that your body has finally given it up. But it's just that thing chewing you up from the inside. She begs him to just let her die, or she'll do it herself, as she can't do this anymore. She can't go through again having that horrible thing growing bigger in you, and the fear that you feel inside your heart, knowing what's coming. The worst part is that when it finally scratches its way out, tearing you up and screaming and crying and shrieking, you look down at it, writhing and flailing around like a terrible bug that's gotten flipped over on its back. And you love it. You can't help it. You love it more than anything. It's a horrible, wretched thing, but you want nothing more than to cover it up and take it somewhere safe where everything will be all right. But then you have to climb up that hill and give it over to her. She asks him if he's ever looked into her eyes, to which he admits that he hasn't. And after a pause, she begs him again to just let her go. Due to her capacity for carrying instances of 8935-B, however, she was remanded to Foundation custody for 4 weeks, undergoing an extensive amnestics regimen in order to increase compliance in potential future cycles. So, obviously this is some pretty horrible stuff, and the themes of the article are fairly clear. It's worth pointing out that all of the authority figures involved here, the ones deciding the fates of the women of Woods Holler, are all males. The women of Woods Holler are effectively brainwashed into compliance, forced to carry these abominations to term, or dying in the process. Anyone that attempts to avoid their fate is either religiously coerced or just mind-wiped so that they can unwittingly go through it again anyways. 8935 features a variety of elements commonly seen in the folk horror genre, combining witchcraft, superstition, sacrifice, and a touch of cosmic horror. Women often end up with the short end of the stick in folk horror stories, but this one really puts the knife in and twists. Childbirth is a rough process, but as usual for the SCP universe, at least it's not this rough.